It's all quiet in the underground bunker. Doors closed, locks bolted. But the Great One isn't just resting on his laurels. He's making sure your weekend is even better by giving you his best. This is the best of Mark Levin.
I am waiting for the United Nations to condemn Putin and Russia. They put an 80-volt battery and hooked it up to the genitals of at least one of the ISIS mass murderers and tortured him, and they videotaped it so the whole world could see. And this is what Russia does, not just under Putin, but other dictators, to send a message. No moral equivalency arguments. No demands of any kind. And, of course, what Putin does in these situations is he tries to use them to attack his enemies. So now he's blaming Ukraine, you see. I want to hit another issue related to terrorism, and then I want to get into this matter in New York. And what's fascinating to me is I've explained this Alvin Bragg case. I went back and looked over a year ago here and on Fox and on Blaze. And I'll explain it again as people explain it anew today, legal analysts and so forth. But we've been on top of this and all these cases, broken them down piece by piece, and we've been right every time. But first, I want to tell you about what this UN resolution was about Israel, because Kirby is lying through his teeth, and he's getting away with it because people don't know enough facts, or they don't want to know enough facts to challenge him. They don't study it. And I get this email blast from David Milstein, stepson, who was also special assistant to Ambassador David Freeman under Donald Trump, ambassador to Israel. Now, here's the summary. Netanyahu announces that if the U.S. doesn't veto the U.N. Security Council resolution for a ceasefire today, this is how it was reported, he's canceling Strategic Affairs Minister Ron Dermer and National Security Advisor Hanegbi's White House meetings. Dermer and Hanegbi, I should say. Their trip to Washington came after Biden asked Netanyahu on the phone last week to send a delegation to discuss alternatives to a major IDF operation in Rafah. Now, this Rafah is what Israel's been trying to do for 5 months. They've pushed what's left of the Hamas terrorist battalions, where all the leadership that's not in Qatar and Turkey is hiding. They've encircled it. They want to blow out the four last battalions, and they want to kill the leaders. And the only one in the way is Joe Biden. Because I have my own theory on this, America, and I'm going to give it to you right now. That Joe Biden, who plays nice with the Iranians, whose administration denied that Iran had anything to do with October 7th when everybody said, what? Who keeps funding the Iranians? Who refused to attack any part of the geography of Iran after they killed three of our soldiers and are still shooting at our forces in the Middle East. And why they're there, I don't know, but you get the point. Because I believe behind the scenes one day we will find, listen to me, I've said it before, but I want to underscore it. One day we will find that there was a quiet arrangement between Biden and the Islamo-Nazi regime in Tehran. No nuclear breakout until after the election. Now, I hope I'm wrong. But I don't think I am. And the key factor I look at, I don't have any inside information, I use my noggin. The key factor I look at is all of a sudden, they watered down their fissible material. Why? Why would they do that, Mr. Producer? Now, they can quickly ratchet it back up. They can quickly ratchet it back up for a nuclear weapon. But why did they do that? And why is Biden kicking the crap out of Israel? Is it just for votes in Michigan and so forth? That's clearly part of it. That's clearly part of it. But can you imagine if Iran announces a nuclear outbreak before the war? Excuse me, before the election? Can you imagine that? Biden will do anything to get reelected, and I mean anything. So for him, this is a twofer, threefer, fourfer. Blame Netanyahu, trash Netanyahu, keep demanding that Israel break itself into pieces where it can't defend itself. Keep accusing Israel with Hamas statistics of a war crime. Now vote basically present, abstaining. So it's 14-0 on a ceasefire. And I want to tell you about this. And I believe that's what's going on behind the scenes. Why would this administration have hired this guy, Malley, who's a pro-Islamo-Nazi regime, who brought in three individuals, one of whom, maybe more of whom, in my view, were spies. If not spies, they had a funny way of acting. But let's just say friendly, special pleaders for Iran. Why would you do that? And why wouldn't you criticize Iran? When's the last time he criticized Iran, ladies and gentlemen? Schumer doesn't go to the floor of the Senate and attack Iran. Biden doesn't attack Iran. Kirby can barely mention the word Iran. Why is that? Why is that? I think I know why. The watering down the fissible material, to me, was the dead giveaway. Why the hell would they do that? And they can quickly ratchet it back up. U.S. officials notified Dermer the U.S. plans to allow two separate ceasefire resolutions to pass in the U.N. Security Council, one calling for a ceasefire, one calling to release the hostages without one being a condition of the other. So they decoupled them. So now Israel is supposed to enter into a ceasefire, not destroy Hamas, and hope that the hostages are released. And Netanyahu said, you know what you just did? You just made it impossible for us to get our hostages out. Because you just told Hamas that one's not connected to the other. So Israel's not only supposed to surrender and not take out the elements that are left in Rafah, Israel is supposed to do so without any commitment to the release of hostages. So here's the Biden administration statement, just to show you what pathological scumbags these are. Our vote does not, and I repeat, does not represent a shift in our policy, White House National Security spokesman John Kirby told reporters. We've been clear, and we've been consistent in our support for a ceasefire as part of a hostage deal, but that's not what they voted for. Here's the text of the Security Council resolution, which says it differently than Kirby. And one of the specific points of contention is paragraph one, excuse me, as Milstein points out. It's weird calling your stepson Milstein, isn't it, Mr. Producer? But there's a lot of Davids out there. One, demands an immediate ceasefire for the month of Ramadan, respected by all parties, leading to a lasting, sustainable ceasefire, and also demands the immediate and unconditional release of all hostages. So putting aside for the moment that Biden has shifted to being pushing for an overall ceasefire as opposed to a temporary one, even before Hamas is eradicated, Israel is strongly opposing the shift in the Biden administration position in the Security Council that does not explicitly include the release of hostages as part of a short-term ceasefire with the words, and also. So they say, and also. Not, and also, it's to be a condition. Now here's the statement from the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister's office said after the vote that the U.S. retreated from its consistent stance in the Security Council that only a few days ago tied a ceasefire to the release of the hostages, which China and Russia vetoed last Friday. This retreat hurts the war effort, as well as the effort to free the hostages, because it gives Hamas hope that intentional pressure will allow them to get a ceasefire without freeing our hostages, he said. In light of the change in the American stance, Prime Minister Netanyahu decided the delegation will not depart. Kirby said there's no change whatsoever. Doesn't that sound like a change, the decoupling to you, Mr. Producer? But Hamas saw it. They put out this statement. Hamas thanks the UN Security Council for its demand for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, calling for a permanent ceasefire that leads to the withdrawal of all Zionist forces from the Gaza Strip and the return of the displaced to the homes from which they left. In a statement posted online, the terror group also says it is willing to engage in an immediate prisoner exchange process that leads to the release of prisoners on both sides. What does that mean? They have hostages. 135 hostages. You know what they now think the number is? 99. They think they'd murdered a third of them. Even the United Kingdom noted that the resolution, quote, "We regret this resolution did not condemn the terrorist acts perpetrated by Hamas on October 7th. That was specifically left out of the resolution. Any condemnation of Hamas, because China and Russia voted against it. And yet, the UK still voted for it. So Biden not only betrayed, as David writes, Israel, but also the over 130 hostages. I don't think there's that many, including American citizens. After promising he would do everything to secure the release, Biden has consistently done the opposite, including wrongly pressuring Israel to stand down from going into Rafah, that is a vital military pressure on Hamas, and which is refusing to credibly, you know, act. And Rich Goldberg, who's great, he's been on my shows before. He said the UN Security Council resolution under consideration reaffirms the complete moral rot inside the United Nations, supported by the European NATO allies of the United States and celebrated by America's greatest enemies. The resolution should have been vetoed. There was a ceasefire on October 6th. The resolution makes believe that today, March 25, 2024, exists in a vacuum. That October 7 never happened, that Hamas is not a vicious terrorist organization that must be destroyed, that a permanent ceasefire can never be achieved with Hamas in control of Gaza. The resolution pretends to care about the hostages, but I told you, they specifically altered the language. So it doesn't. And Kirby goes in front of those reporters and lies through his teeth. And you want to know why, America? Because not one of those reporters actually read the resolution. Not one. Or they would have saw the decoupling. Not one of them read it. The betrayal of Israel by the Democrat Party, by the Biden administration, the State Department, which is true to form as it did in the 30s and 40s, by the Democrats in Congress, is beyond dispute or debate. They're now bragging about it. And the reason why Biden never criticizes Iran, never hits Iran, even though it kills our soldiers, keeps giving them tens of billions, hundreds of billions, more than Ukraine, and the reason is this. Because I believe there's some kind of an arrangement. What is Joe Biden doing to prevent the Iranians from getting nuclear weapons, Mr. Producer? Absolutely nothing. Zero. Why? Why is he putting all the heat on Israel? Why does he want Israel to take it's not the citizens. Ladies and gentlemen, if he gave a damn about citizens, he'd secure our southern border. Doesn't give a crap about these Palestinians. Are you kidding me? Any more than Putin does or China does or Iran does. They're all pawns for these other countries. If he cared about citizens, he'd secure our border. Doesn't care about citizens with the fentanyl coming in, the slavery on the southern border, the horrendous situation, potential terrorism going on. And we're to believe he cares about those Palestinian citizens? You know what's funny? Nobody cares about them. Not even the terrorist Palestinians. But my point is, what's going on here is about election, Iran, and nukes, as well as the rest.
Mark Levin.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in America with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, much, much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. My wife Julie and I decided it was time to add more flowering trees to our landscape, and Fast Growing Tree was a great resource for us. A large selection and no hassle ordering or shipping. This spring they have the best deals online, up to half off on selected plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code LEVIN at checkout. LEVIN. Now that's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code LEVIN. VIN at checkout. FastGrowingTrees.com, code LEVIN. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Please visit FastGrowingTrees.com for details.
Making your weekend even better. This is the best of Mark Levin.
And it's an amazing thing. It's amazing. I'm here behind this mic. I'm on Fox, I'm on Blaze, and I write these books. I'm the best-selling conservative author in America. With serious books, substantive books. That's because of you. You want to learn, you want to know, and so forth. Yet it seems like people who want to comment on these things don't want to learn and think they know everything. The entire book on freedom of the press talks about pretty much what you saw take place with McDaniel. And far more, of course. It gives a history lesson about the press and on and on and on. But right there on page 21, this book came out 5 years ago. I talked about the incestuous relationship between Democrats and journalism. And here, even from the Atlantic, Time, and by the way, Psaki had no problem getting a job at MSNBC, did she? No, she didn't. Time managing editor, and this is from several years ago, so it's changed, but at the time, Time magazine managing editor Rick Stengel moved to the State Department as Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs under Obama. Douglas Franz wrote for the New York Times and the LA Times, was an Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs. Boston Globe online political editor Glenn Johnson was a senior advisor at the State Department. Washington Post writer Stephen Barr moved to the Labor Department as senior managing director of the Office of Public Affairs. Washington Post congressional reporter Schley Murray became Vice President Joe Biden's communications director and later senior advisor to Obama. Again, it's a lot worse now than it was then. Rosa Brooks was a columnist for the LA Times before taking a position with the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy in the Obama administration, all of these. Washington Post Desmond Thompson left the paper to serve as a speechwriter for the U.S. ambassador to Britain. Roberta Baskin, a one-time CBS News investigative reporter, joined the Department of HHS as a senior communication advisor. Washington Post Warren Bass, an Outlook section deputy editor, joined then United Nations Ambassador Susan Rice as director of speechwriting and senior policy advisor. Education Week reporter David Hoff moved to the Education Department. CNN senior political producer Sasha Johnson joined the Department of Transportation, later became chief of staff at the FAA. Chicago Tribune's Jill Zuckman moved to the Department of Transportation as communications director. Rick Weiss, who'd worked for the Washington Post, became communications director, senior policy strategist for the White House Office of Science and Technology. Former CBS and ABC reporter Linda Douglas joined the Obama campaign and later communications director for the White House Office of Health Reform. New York Times reporter Eric Dash moved to the Treasury Department's Public Affairs Office, as did MSNBC producer Anthony Reyes. CNN's Anish Raman worked for the Obama campaign, later a speechwriter for President Obama. CNN's national security reporter Jim Sciutto formerly with ABC News, served as chief of staff to UN ambassador to China, Gary Locke, San Francisco Chronicle environmental reporter. Kelly Zito joined the EPA Public Affairs Department. Time Magazine, Washington Bureau Chief Jay Carney, remember him as Obama's mouthpiece, became communication directors for Vice President Biden and later Obama. There's so many. There's a lot more. MSNBC's Chris Matthew previously worked for, among others, Jimmy Carter and Tip O'Neill. CNN's Chris Cuomo, now, of course, at that other network, I can't remember their name. His brother, the New York's Democratic Governor, Andrew Cuomo. CNN's Jake Tapper worked for Democratic Congresswoman Marjorie Margolis Mezvinsky and Handgun Control, Inc. ABC's Cokie Roberts' father was Hale Boggs, the House Democratic Majority Leader. Of course, ABC's George Stephanopoulos worked for President Bill Clinton. And the list goes on. Now, the only Republican, of course, who they'll hire, with very, very rare exceptions, are never Trumpers. So you see, ladies and gentlemen, at Fox, you have individuals who are hardcore Democrats. They sit on the panels. They give their commentary and so forth. It's not true at these other networks. NBC is owned by Comcast. Many of you have Comcast cable. That's the platform. You don't have any choice. If you're doing cable, it's whatever company laid the cable and whatever your town agreed to whatever company laid the cable. And then there's our friend from Meet the Press, Mr. Producer, Chucky. And Chuck Todd worked for Tom Harkin's election when he was a young man, that is Todd. His wife is a big-time Democrat operative, consultant, makes a fortune from that. He sat there at Meet the Depressed and was a disgusting, reprobate partisan. And now he goes on Christine Welker's show, nobody's ever heard of before. And these networks, whether they're cable or otherwise, they want you to pretend they're real news operations. Now keep in mind, the Democrat Party denied that George W. Bush won the 2000 election. They denied that he won the 2004 election. They denied that Trump won his first election. And their members are on the floor of the House when the two chambers meet to count electoral votes and objected. MSNBC standards are so low, they have Al Sharpton there. Now, he's not only a Democrat, his history is grotesque. And he's not alone. Look at their whole lineup. Never Trumpers and American haters. Well, really the same thing. So here's Rona McDaniel on Meet the Press. And you know what? I blame you, Rona McDaniel, because you should know better than this. You should know better than this. There's a senator for now who shall be nameless, but at some point I'll mention it. Who we helped, Mr. Producer, is part of the Tea Party movement. Remember that? This senator was at 5%. Came on this program, and you supported this senator. He doesn't want to come on this program. But he'll go on any of the Sunday shows. Been all over the place. All over the place. And so we're not interested in having him on anyway. Because he's everywhere anyway. We try to bring you a fresh perspective. But I want you to listen to this. Rona McDaniel and Kristen Welker. Cut 17. Go.
Well, let's talk about the election now. Donald Trump says one of his first acts, if he is reelected to a second term, would be, quote, to free those charged and convicted of crimes.
All right, so here's what's going on now. Welker has thrown in with the pack. They're not asking McDaniel her opinion on events yet to take place or events that are taking place. No, they want her to justify why she should be on NBC, given her position as former head of the RNC, where she's supposed to defend the former president and the Republican Party. Now, nobody demands that of Psaki. Nobody goes to Sharpton and says, okay, 30 years ago you did this, pal. Now, nobody does that. Nobody goes to Joe Scarborough and says, you know, you used to be a hack in the back row, and we can tell you all these resolutions that you promoted and so forth, and now you don't. So it's all a ruse. The media are exactly what I wrote in Unfreedom of the Press. The media are exactly what you see and hear. That's what they are. By the way, this guy Kevin O'Leary is pretty good, don't you think, Mr. Producer? The problem I have with him, though, is he cannot distance himself from Donald Trump enough. But put Donald Trump aside, New York. How do you put Donald Trump aside when he's the target in New York? Well, this isn't about Trump. It's about, well, why isn't it about Trump? He's the target. So I like him. He gives good business analysis. He seems like a tough guy. But on the other hand, he seems like a guy that doesn't want to be pigeonholed by the left. You got to stand up to the left. And you got to say, more than a generalized, you know, this is bad for business and so forth. Of course it's bad for business. Everybody knows that. But it's bad for the Republic when the other side tries to destroy the other candidate, bankrupt them, and put them in prison. That's a problem, too. You can't make that case if you don't mention Donald Trump. Anyway, go ahead, Mr. Producer.
January 6th, do you support that?
I want to be very clear. The violence that happened on January 6th is unacceptable. It doesn't
work. You're going to have to bend your knee. You're going to have to grovel. Because if you do not commit to, essentially take oath to, the Democrat Party ideology in the media, not only are you not welcome anyway, but if you're not going to be humiliated and do a Michael Steele or Joe Scarborough or Nicole Wallace or all the rest of the reprobates, then you don't have a shot, period. Go ahead.
Our country, it certainly does not represent my party. We should not be attacking the Capitol. We should not be having violence. I said it that day. I put a statement out
there. What do you think about that, Sharpton? You all remember Sharpton and his history, don't you, ladies and gentlemen? I do. Go ahead.
That this is not acceptable. If you attacked our Capitol and you've been convicted, then that should stay.
So then, but to the question though, do you disagree with Trump?
You don't understand. You don't understand, Ronan. It's not good enough. It'll never be good enough. But go ahead.
Free those who've been charged.
I do not think people who committed violent acts on January 6th should be freed.
So you disagree with that? He's been saying that for months. Rana, why not speak out earlier?
Rana's not there representing Trump. She just was removed from the RNC. Any more than Psaki. Although she is representing Biden, and that's okay. Go ahead.
Speak out about that now.
When you're the RNC chair, you kind of take one for the whole team, right?
Is this not painful, Mr. Producer? Is it really worth groveling? Ladies and gentlemen, how much could they be paying her to be groveling? It's really painful. Let's move on to Cut 18. Go.
I'll be joined by...
Well, actually, let's not do Cut 18. Let's do Cut 19. Schmuck Todd, who's all tied in with the Democrats, who destroyed Meet the Depressed, destroyed it, which is why he got the axe. That and a stupid haircut. Go ahead.
Let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation, because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. So I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. She wants us to believe.
Now, I want you to listen to this preening, self-righteous piece of crap who's got more tentacles than the Democrat Party, and so does his wife, than anyone you can imagine. This is a guy who announced there would be no discuss about any challenges to climate change. We're not going to have any climate denial. He's got an IQ about negative 14. Some people can pull it off. He can't, as I've said before. He's part of the new school journalist, which means no journalism. So she's under attack. This means anybody other than an anti-Trumper, a never-Trumper, a Romney type, a Murkowski type, a Collins type, but never a Mike Lee type or a Ted Cruz type of that philosophical perspective will ever be allowed on. Can you tell me the name of a known, respected, scholarly conservative that's on any of these networks anymore? I can't think of one, Mr. Medusa, can you? I can't think of any. And if there is one, it's out there somewhere. Go ahead.
See, when the RNC was paying for it. So she has credibility issues that she still has to deal with.
Yeah. And so do you, pal. What about Jen Psaki? I'm serious. She's on their network. She's on their network. She has no credibility problem. I guarantee you she still talks to Biden and the staff over there. So what is the credibility issue? You don't understand anything, you little puke. The media have no credibility. And jerks like you led the way. None whatsoever. Period. But you see, McDaniel, I'm not even defending her. I'm making a point. I feel bad that she's being trashed like this, but you have to be expected. Chuck Todd would never come on my program, would he, Mr. Producer? They never invited me on their programs to talk about my books. We've tried to get Todd on here. I offered Meet the Press, Face the Nation, Good Morning America, all of them. And by the way, I don't need them, but I wanted to get into a debate. I wanted to engage. They want nothing to do with it. We can't even get them on this program. I can't get them on my Fox program. I'm open to debate. They're not. They're propagandists. That's all they are. Chuck Todd, you are a sleazeball extraordinaire. When you look up in the dictionary, sleazeball, there's Chuck with his haircut.
Mark Levin.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s. The breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
You're listening to the best of Mark Levin.
I'm going to play for you the dispatch when the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed. I've used this bridge, as have my family members, many, many, many times. And it's a terrible tragedy. That Baltimore port, as you probably heard by now, Baltimore Harbor, is the busiest on the East Coast. And that bridge is now blocking, as is the freighter, any ingress or egress from that harbor. I suspect the Philadelphia port will pick up more business than some of the others along the East Coast, but it is a significant matter. As best as we can tell, we're not actually given numbers, not that numbers are the end-all and be-all. There are six people missing, crew that were working on the bridge. It amazes me at times like this how much we appreciate our police officers, firefighters, emergency personnel, our first responders. And yet when there aren't emergencies, we keep accusing them of systemic racism and other hard things. And yet these are the men and women we turn to in the worst of times. And there's a reason we turn to them. I want you to listen to what took place on the initial dispatch and then the follow-up dispatch. Obviously, Baltimore has never suffered a tragedy like this. This is a big bridge. This bridge is 1.6 miles long. It's one of the longest bridges in the country and on the East Coast. Maybe the longest bridge on the East Coast for all I know. In an important part of our country, industrial area, where there's an enormous amount of shipping. Anybody that's driven down or up 95, you can see all the cars, you can see all the freighters, you can see it all. But we'll begin. I'm not going to speak. I want you to hear it all. Mr. Producer, we'll do one and two together. Cut one and two. Go.
I need one of you guys on the south side, one of you guys on the north side. Hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching that just lost their steering. So that until you get that under control, we got to stop all traffic.
Yeah, we're all on the route to the south side.
This is special direction.
I'm holding traffic now. I was driving, but we stopped prior to the bridge, so I'll have all out-of-loop traffic stopped.
10-4, is there a crew working on the bridge right now?
K-9-1, but they out.
Good.
Want me to stop traffic on this site right now?
Yeah, if we can stop traffic, just make sure no one's on the bridge right now. I'm not sure where. If there's a crew up there, you might want to notify whoever the foreman is, see if we can get them off the bridge temporarily.
10-4, once the other unit gets here, I'll ride up on the bridge. I have all interloop traffic stopped at this time. But once you get here, I'll go grab the workers on the Key Bridge and then stop the outer loop.
C-13 dispatch, the whole bridge just fell down. Everybody, the whole bridge just collapsed.
Simple dispatch is direct. That's correct. This time.
Do we know if all traffic was stopped?
I can't get to the other side, sir. The bridge is down. We're going to have to get somebody on the other side, Anne Arundel County MSP, to get up here and stop traffic coming northbound on the Key Bridge.
C-13, I'm holding all traffic northbound.
Battalion 1 to command.
Battalion 1, go ahead.
MTAC police, their incident command location is going to be located for them as far as the MTA police as AOC Center, 2330 Brewing Highway. They have representatives there to try and get footage up. They reported they knew the ship was running off course prior to the collapse, and they started clearing the bridge. All the traffic, all the construction stuff, and a few vehicles were stopped prior to the collision.
Okay, copy that. If you have a liaison with them, see if you can find out if this ship was inboard into the port or if it was outbound.
They're trying to ascertain now. Do you have a representative you want me to send to there or to have another dispatch chief sent there?
Are you able to make it to Burning Highway or are you isolated on the bridge?
Isolated under the bridge. Not able to get back out this time due to traffic all being backed up along there.
Okay, I copy that. Command to communications.
Go ahead, command.
I need a special call, a chief officer or a command level officer to the MVTA command post over on Browning Highway.
Message received, 221.
9-1 command, that's going to be located at 2330 Browning Highway. There'll be a door access code. I'll give you a phone number and relay when our chief gets there.
Message received, 221.
Fire rescue boat 2 to command, be advised. The vessel was outbound, appears to be outbound. At this time, the vessel also looks sound, and it has a large piece of the bridge resting on the bow.
Under the bridge. Command to truck 21.
Truck 21, go ahead.
Truck 21, you're going to be the staging officer. I need you to ascertain a better staging location that's outside of this parking lot.
Sorry, 5 on the run.
141.
EMS 6, the world.
EMS 6, 141. Units responding on rescue alarm, I-695 East. Be advised, 13 persons possibly in the water. There was a 13-person construction crew operating on the bridge, possibly in the water at this time. 146.
6 to communications. Are you advising there's 13 people in the water?
Possibly 13 people in the water at this time. A construction crew.
Okay. Let's go ahead and special call Baltimore County Marine Unit 269 and Marine Unit 216. notify Anne Arundel County to also stand by for their boat.
Communications copy, 144.
SOC 5, communications, could be good. You guys test my MPT, please.
SOC 5, I copy, 144.
6 to communications. Awesome. Dispatch the dive unit on this call to alert the dive team and start one more additional transport unit.
Communications copy, 145.
Time, Chief 1, communications.
What time, Chief 1?
You have a landline with MTA police. See if anybody got a location. Better location on the bridge, east side or west side. And on the outbound lane.
Okay, so it's safe. The Coast Guard actually called it in and said that it was just off of Fort Armstead Park. I gave exact coordinations to the fire rescue boat. We can try contacting MTA police.
All right, one copy.
146.
Battalion 6 to 1, it was a CAD error that you were dispatched. I'll let you use your discretion.
Battalion 6 to 1, we'll keep coming in. We'll come in from the Browning Highway end, east side.
Okay, you'll be accessing the inner loop of I-695 across the bridge?
Yeah, we come down Browning Highway and do a dumpster into 695. We'll post up that way, see if we get anything, and you'll be posting from the other end of Fort Martin State.
6 again.
EMS 6, repeat. EMS 6, repeat.
We got an exit.
That's a negative, EMS 6. We do not have exit at this time. We're trying to get our information.
SOC 5 to Battalion 6.
6, come in.
Yeah, Chief, I went over to Fort Armistead and I'll see if I can't get eyes on anything from there.
Okay, I copy. You're at Fort Armistead.
Dive coordinator, I'm en route.
Dive coordinator, en route, 148. Communications, Battalion Chief 6. Boat 19 has been notified.
I'm on board.
Engine 13, 148.
Battalion 1 of communications, get a hold of MTA Police ASAP. I have MTA Police cars heading a different direction than us. We need some information from them.
Communications copy, Battalion Chief 1. We are trying to contact them right now.
Battalion 6, Engine 13, you're responding with one diver, is that right?
Battalion Chief 6, that's affirmative. Engine 13 has one diver on board.
Copy.
Engine 57, clear the air. Engine 57, clear the air. I'm on 695, headed towards Browning Highway, here with the police. They are reporting that the middle section of the bridge collapsed into the water, and there are unknown amounts of people and or vehicles in the water. We are committed to 695 in a traffic jam. That's as much information as I have right now. I'll be command.
Battalion Chief 6 to communications.
Go ahead, Battalion Chief 6.
Alert Baltimore County Engine 57. Have them respond on the inner loop. Dispatch the two remaining squad companies. Prepare for backfill of SOC units into the city.
Communications, copy, command.
SOC 5, Battalion 6. Probably would be a bad idea. I'd make a recommendation to Coast Guard. They're right around the corner, see if they could be of assistance to us.
Battalion 1 to communications.
Go ahead, Battalion Chief 1.
You got Foxtrot or MTA State Police en route with a helo?
We are still trying to contact MTA Police, and we will contact Foxtrot as well.
All right, as far as MTA Police, you can reach out to State Police if you got contact. See if we can get a State Trooper en route.
Message received, 151.
Command, the communications update. We do have several police officers on eastbound 695 that are stopping traffic, so no more vehicles try to enter. We're going to try to get as close to the bridge as possible to get a better look, but I don't want to commit to the bridge if it's unstable.
SOC 5, communications and all units responding, hold the air. SOC 5, Battalion 6, and communications on Fort Armistead, be advised the entire bridge, the entire key bridge in the harbor. I advise to hold all traffic from coming to the bridge. I advise again, the entire key bridge has fallen into the harbor.
That's Units responding on rescue alarm I-695. Be advised, the entire Key Bridge has now collapsed into the water. The entire Key Bridge has now collapsed into the water. Proceed with caution. It's 152. Units responding on rescue alarm Key Bridge. No units access the Key Bridge. I repeat, no units access the Key Bridge. 159.
Engine 57 to command.
Command, go ahead.
We've done a quick search up here on the bridge with our kick and visually. We're clear of any other cars or civilians on this side. We just got us and a few police officers here, and they cleared out all the rest of the traffic. You want us to just stand by up here?
That's correct. Go ahead and stay by where you are.
And it goes on, including the shortly after this, talk about there's six people in the water and we can't find them. And as of this hour, they're still looking. You heard now there the first 15 minutes after the bridge collapsed. Those brave heroes moving as fast as they can in a situation they've never confronted before. An entire bridge, 1.6 miles, collapse. Just the pieces of it are left, you can see. And it's a horrendous thing. Horrendous. It's shocking.
Mark Levin.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
The Great One makes your weekend even better. This is the best of Mark Levin.
Well, America, about 20 minutes ago, the wire services reported that Joe Lieberman died. All we know is that he died from complications from a fall when he was in New York City. Now, unfortunately, these falls happen too often. Took the life of my father-in-law. Now, Lieberman really was the last of the moderates. He really was. Even the guy that's replaced him, Chris Murphy, he's a hardball lefty. And, of course, in 2007, he endorsed John McCain for president. But he was a moderate, and in Connecticut, he was challenged by a guy named Ned Lamont. He's a businessman, a leftist, who wanted to take his party further left and wanted the nomination for the Senate seat that year and won the nomination against Lieberman. And Lieberman said, "I love my party, but I love my country more." And he ran as an independent. And he got 50% of the vote. He won re-election to the Senate with 70% Republicans voting for him, 30% Democrats voting for him, 50% independents voting for him. He had lifelong Republican friends and Democrat friends. But the likes of AOC and Bernie Sanders and so on, that's just too much for him. And he took a stance against them. And it's really odd it would come at this time. I talked about the Democrat Party purifying itself over the years, which is exactly what it's done. Exactly what it's done. Now, Joe Lieberman was a great patriot. Great patriot. Obviously, we didn't always agree with him, you or I. But that said, he's one of the few who spoke out against fellow Democrats, of course, against Republicans. And he was for this no-labels movement because that's who he was. He was, you know, moderate. Very few Democrats have had the guts to speak out when Chuck Schumer made that speech he did on the Senate floor, which will go down in history as one of the most horrific speeches ever given by any top American official. And clearly undermined the state of Israel in the middle of a war. Because Schumer carries water. He carried water for Obama. He carried water for other Democrats. And he carries water for Biden. What Biden has done and is doing to our country and to the state of Israel is unconscionable. It's diabolical. Diabolical. I want to remind you of what Senator Lieberman said on Fox News last Monday. I guess it was with Neil Cavuto, Mr. Producer. And I get the impression, although obviously I don't know, that Lieberman and Cavuto were pretty friendly. But I want you to hear just a minute and a half of what a person who puts country before party says. Now, we here, we always put country before anything. Certainly before party. But today, and in autocratic regimes around the world, the party comes first, and that's the way the Democrats operate. That's what happened to this Rona McDaniel. That was it. But let's listen to this. This is 9 days ago. Just 9 days ago. Cut 20, go.
I don't think anything was brave about it. I think it was outrageous, and I think really it was a case of a high elected official in the U.S. taking advantage of a friend. And you wouldn't do this with a casual ally or certainly an enemy. But to call out one of our closest allies in the world, Israel, a democracy, when it's at war, and tell its people they should dump their prime minister. Wow, talk about crossing a red line. That was a diplomatic red line that I have never in all my years seen crossed. And it is outrageous. I've been following the polls in Israel. The truth is that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not popular right now, and his right-wing government is not popular. But if you ask the people of Israel, is Netanyahu following the right policy in Gaza, trying to destroy Hamas? The answer is overwhelmingly positive. So Chuck Schumer is asking the people of Israel to do something totally contrary to what their opinion is. And I mean, can you imagine if Schumer had made a similar appeal to the people of Britain to overthrow Prime Minister Sunak for some reason, or the people of Ukraine to overthrow President Zelensky because he wasn't making enough progress.
And this voice, his voice, will be terribly missed. He wasn't a showboat. He wasn't a drama queen. You can hear a very soft-spoken man, very decent man. A Democrat, a moderate, who had to leave his party in order to win re-election to the Senate and ran as an independent the next time as well. The vice presidential nominee of his party was Gore in 2000. And 7 years later, in the run-up to the 2008 election, he endorses McCain. Just want you to think about that. You compare a guy like Lieberman to Schumer, there's no comparison. You compare a guy like Lieberman to Sanders, there's no comparison to Blinken, to Thomas Friedman of the New York Times. History will treat Joe Lieberman very, very well. And it should. We are in extraordinarily dangerous and dark times in this country. We have media outlets that are as bad as any media outlets in regimes that have state-run media, whether it's communist China, communist North Korea, communist Cuba, communist Venezuela, fascistic Russia. Honest to God, folks, NBC and MSNBC, CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and most of the others, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the people who work in these companies. That's what they are, companies, and the most radical elements in our country. And honestly, the candidacy of Donald Trump, the presidency of Donald Trump, the effort at the Trump re-election, the unbelievable, unspeakable, unimaginable slaughter of the Israeli Jews on October 7th, it's brought it all to the fore. All to the fore. These elements are out of the closet now. They're in our universities, and they control them. They're in our media, and they control it. They're in Hollywood, and they control it. And these are all, just as there's the Muslim Brotherhood, the umbrella group for all these groups throughout the Middle East and so forth, there's the Democrat Party. Obviously, it's not the Muslim Brotherhood. But in terms of structure, it's the mothership to all these movements. All these CRT, DEI, economic socialism, cultural Marxism, open borders, the war on our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, the cancerous populating of our courts with radical leftists and attacking those judges and justices that don't comply, the river to the sea crowd, all of it. Anti-American, hate America. These are very grim times. And the man in the Oval Office seeks to exploit it all. Seeks to exploit it all. I posted, in the last week alone, he's accused Donald Trump of wanting to destroy health care. It's a lie. Who wants to destroy health care? He's accused Donald Trump of wanting to destroy Social Security, and yet it was he who went to the Senate floor multiple times and demanded that Social Security be slashed. Donald Trump has demanded that it go untouched, even though I personally believe it needs to be reformed. He does not. Biden is accusing Trump of wanting to destroy Medicare. Trump hasn't said anything about destroying Medicare. Biden has accused Trump of wanting to outlaw abortion nationwide. That's clearly not Trump's position. And this is the obsession of the Democrat Party for the reason that I wrote in The Democrat Party Hates America, which was the most important voting demographic the Democrats have. It's not blacks. It's not Jews. It's not any minority. It's single women by a huge margin. Single, childless women. That is their strongest base. That's why they will talk of abortion until they're blue in the face. He says Donald Trump wants to destroy democracy. And yet, Donald Trump left office. He did not commit any acts of insurrection or sedition or violence, which is how Joe Biden wound up in the Oval Office. It's Joe Biden who's clearly destroying our republic. And he says that Donald Trump wants to put his political opponents in prison, when in fact he's trying to put Donald Trump in prison. What you saw at MSNBC and NBC with Rona McDaniel has nothing to do with Rona McDaniel. It's much bigger than that. These people hate your guts, and they hate this country. They talk about elections. They try to change the electoral system in every single state. They have a phalanx of lawyers from one end of the country to the other, trying to institute laws and rules and executive orders that ensure they can't lose. And apparently, it's a bridge too far to require people to show the voter ID that's already been handed out to them for a thousand other reasons when they vote. Because the Democrats, by that act alone, are depending on fraud. They don't care about what's happening in the open border. They don't care what's happening to our people as a result of an open border. They could care less. Joe Lieberman said, "I love my party, but my country comes first." That's not your typical Democrat. They love their party first, foremost, above all else. And in many ways, they hate our country. Lieberman wanted nothing to do with that. He's the only major Democrat that I can think of who took on his party, who took on Schumer, who rejected what Biden was doing. Nothing in common with Bernie Sanders, would not play footsie with the Marxist swing of the Democrat Party, wanted nothing to do with it. And unfortunately, with his death, there are none or very few left like him. None or very few. MSNBC is the network of Bernie Sanders and AOC. CNN is the network of Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer.
Mark Levin.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
We're giving you nothing but the best of Mark Levin.
What's taking place in New York after the cold-blooded murder of an NYPD officer is illustrative of what's going on between the Democrat Party and the rest of the nation. Donald Trump is a private citizen, and yet he was president. He loves law enforcement. He loves America. That is a big difference from Obama, big difference from Obama and Biden, who clearly do not. They call it fundamental transformation. An open border demonstrates that you don't love the American citizen. For people like Biden and Obama and, yes, Clinton, this is a big stage. It's all about them. It's all about power. It's all about their party. It's not about country. It's not about the American people. It's a big play. It's a big game. Power, power, power. And they're at the highest tier of power two former presidents and a sitting president. Biden has spent his entire life in Washington, D.C., raising money, using government to bully. Obama has spent his entire life as a Marxist. That's correct. Domestic terrorists, Palestinian terrorists, and communists, Alinsky and others. This is what's taking place in New York. Biden doesn't give a damn about this police officer. Biden didn't give a damn about the people who have died and doesn't as a result of his policies on the border. The slavery, the brutality, the murder. He doesn't care. He pretends to care about the people in Gaza. But as Mark Penn, Democrat pollster for Clinton, points out, there are six times as many people in Haiti who are, as we speak, starving to death. They have no policy towards Haiti, none. They don't even talk about Haiti. There's a brilliant piece in the Tablet. It's called The President's War Against the Jews. Biden claims he's a lifelong friend of the Jewish people and he's Zionist, but these empty words are cover for decades-long antipathy. And he has this same antipathy toward the American people. When he walked into the Senate, he sided with the racists and the segregationists. He opposed integrating our public schools. That was his position. Now, having been an anti-black racist, he figures anti-white racism will get him even further. But even more, it's his anti-Semitism. It's finally come to the fore. He spent a lifetime saying one thing and doing another. And now as president, he sees his opportunity. Israel was attacked, their back is against the wall, and there's a report today that in fact he is denying Israel key weapons systems that they've asked for. He's denying it. And this piece says, for some American Jews, the months since October 7 have felt like a horror movie, as they watch with increasing alarm, as our president, for whom many voted and whom many placed invaluable trust, seemed to, moment after crucial moment, throw Israel under the bus. And by the way, today his spokes idiot announced there's been no change in our policies on Israel, so they just keep lying. Earlier this month, the UN report from its Office of Special Representative Secretary General revealed that Israel has been saying for months, namely that Hamas committed the most vile sexual violence and torture on October 7. And such treatment likely continues to be perpetrated on hostages. Experts from the UN, an organization that is routinely hostile to the Jewish state, actually found, quote, clear and convincing information that some hostages have been subjected to various forms of conflict-related sexual violence, including rape and sexualized torture and sexualized cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment, is a quote. And it also has reasonable grounds to believe that such violence may be ongoing. You haven't heard Joe Biden say a word about it. And there's five Americans among those hostages, at least five. In reaction, Joe Biden's State Department chose to level the charge of sexual abuse at Israel. Recently, IDF Brigadier General Amir Avivi recounted his meeting with a senior State Department official since identified as Jill Hutchings. Jill Hutchings, director of the Office of Israeli and Palestinian Affairs, who proceeded to accuse Israel, quote, of systematically sexually abusing Palestinian women, unquote. The State Department's claim was based on information from Hamas pushed by Qatar's Al Jazeera, which ended up deleting the story after it proved to be fabricated. Indeed, Biden briefly expressed empathy with Israel after the heinous attack on October 7, But since then, along with his Secretary of State Antony Blinken, Biden has been working at breakneck speed to undermine, if not fully impede, Israel in its existential battle against the Iran-funded Hamas and Hezbollah terrorists, a campaign that has now extended to official blood libels about deliberate Israeli campaigns of genocide, famine and starvation, killing babies and sexual abuse, culminating in the administration's betrayal of Israel and siding with Hamas at the Security Council last Monday. In the blink of an eye, Biden has gone from framing Hamas as pure, unadulterated evil to putting immense pressure on Israel to stand down. And the pressure is not of recent origin. More than 40 years ago, Joe Biden prompted one of the most famous phrases ever uttered by an Israeli prime minister. In a private session with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in 1982, Biden threatened Prime Minister Menachem Begin with cutting off U.S. aid if Israel did not stop its quote-unquote settlements in Judea and Samaria. And Begin replied, as we've discussed here, "Don't threaten us with cutting off your aid. It will not work. I'm not a Jew with trembling knees. I'm a proud Jew with 3,700 years of civilized history. Nobody came to our aid when we were dying in the gas chambers and ovens. Nobody came to our aid when we were striving to create our country. We paid for it. We fought for it. We died for it. And we will stand by our principles. We will defend them. And when necessary, we'll die for them, with or without your aid." Well, Biden's scorn for Israel's current prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, is significantly more vocal, referring to Netanyahu as a bad effing guy and an a-hole, language that is difficult to imagine him using about any other leader of a friendly foreign state. More recently, as he swaggered his way out of the State of the Union doing his whispering, leaning-in shtick, Biden told Blinken and others, quote, "I told him, BB, don't repeat this, but you and I are going to have a come-to-Jesus meeting." Biden knew he was on a hot mic and admitted as much. He wanted the world to know what he thinks of Israel's prime minister. And to broadcast that, he was putting the squeeze on Israel to force it to forgo its ability to defend itself. In fact, this has been Biden's posture from day one. Biden has made downgrading Israel and elevating the Palestinians while also using them as a pressure tool against Israel central to his policy in the region. Upon taking office and despite the Taylor Force Act, which prohibits the U.S. from sending certain tax dollars to the Palestinian Authority until it stops funding terrorism, Biden rewarded Palestinian terrorism with U.S. taxpayer monies, ultimately amounting to almost $1 billion. American First Legal Foundation, where I'm senior counsel, filed suit against Biden and Blinken on behalf of Congressman Ronnie Jackson, Stewart and Robbie Force, parents of Taylor Force, The U.S. Army veteran, West Point graduate, murdered at the hands of a Palestinian terrorist in 2016. And Sari Singer, herself a victim of Palestinian terrorism in 2003, for violating the Taylor Force Act. Jessica Smarek recently denied the government's motion to dismiss the case. We'll see where it goes. Biden knows that payments to Abbas's Palestinian Authority incentivize and reward terrorists and the terrorist operations. His actions reveal he doesn't care. And the same applies to Secretary of State Blinken. His State Department revealed in a March 2022 fact sheet that, quote, "Since April 2021, the United States has provided over $500 million in assistance for the Palestinians, including more than $417 million in humanitarian assistance for mainly the descendants of Palestinian refugees through UNRWA." Now, UNRWA is that UN organization that was involved on October 7th. Biden has what's known as a whole-of-government approach in his embrace of the Palestinians at the expense of Israel, mobilizing multiple executive branch agencies to work across individual silos to implement an integrated policy. And just last year, his Department of Homeland Security ceremoniously handed over to the Palestinian Authority a 2,700-year-old spoon dating back to the Assyrian Empire, describing the conveyance as, quote, "historic repatriation." There were no Palestinians, and that's the point, that they did it anyway. The State Department's George Knoll, chief of the Office of Palestinian Affairs, described the spoon as an example of Palestinian cultural patrimony, and that the transfer was a historic moment between the American and Palestinian people. This attempt to manufacture an ancient Palestinian lineage in the land of Israel while denying the right of Jews to settle in their ancestral home was clear. October 7 didn't temper this obscenity. Just one day after October 7, Blinken, in concert with Turkey, called for a ceasefire by a post on Twitter, an ex post, on the evening of October 8. Blinken deleted the post about 12 hours later, but the message was loud and clear. Stand down and remain victims. 2 days later, Biden's National Security Council spokesman called on Israel to show restraint and take only necessary and proportionate action, quote unquote, to defend itself. The inconvenient truth is there was a ceasefire on October 6th. Hamas broke it with financial and military assistance from Iran. A terrorist state is now flush with billions in sanctions relief as a direct result of Biden's disastrous policy of gifting the Islamic Republic with cash, some of which he helpfully provided barely a month after the October terror attack. And on November 14th, the administration extended a sanctions waiver, allowing Iran to access $10 billion. By the way, did it again a few weeks ago. U.S. spokesmen have been repeatedly unable to deny that the monies delivered by Biden to Iran weren't used in funding the October 7 attack, because, of course, they were. Now, as if funding Hamas through Iran weren't bad enough, Biden made it a top priority to help maintain open supply lines to Gaza, while also looking the other way as Hamas intercepts and hijacks 60% or more of the humanitarian aid from the many thousands of aid trucks coming into the Strip since the start of the war. Hamas either keeps the aid for its terrorists or sells it to non-combatants at exorbitant prices. This is being reported almost daily from multiple sources, with social media videos corroborating the reports of Hamas's theft of the cargo. And instead of condemning Hamas for the aid crisis, Biden blames Israel for what his Secretary of State has claimed is an acute food insecurity crisis in Gaza, supposedly affecting 100% of the population. Biden also ignores that Hamas steals the fuel aid to fire rockets and operate its tunnels. When thousands of Gazans swarmed some 30 food delivery trucks in Gaza and a deadly stampede ensued, IDF aerial footage corroborated that the IDF's account was right, showing that Hamas was directly to blame, and they fired, Hamas did, on the Palestinians. And yet both the media and the Biden administration have continued to blame Israel. Now, the piece goes on in significant detail with exquisite substance. And the title of the piece is a very gutsy title and a very accurate title. The President's War Against the Jews. And it goes on about anti-Semitism in America and how Biden's doing next to nothing and he won't even speak out against it. And he never did at the State of the Union. Biden's taken a side. He's siding with the Islamists. That's where his party is. That's where he is. He's siding with academia. He's siding with Hollywood. He's siding with the media. He's siding with Obama. He's firmly on the side of the Islamists. The Tablet, tabletmag.com, published this piece. It was written by a beautiful and brilliant woman, my wife, Julie.